What is Tolkien's canon? What can we view as definitively part of the legendarium, and what is less clear? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover Tolkien's world in full and in geeky depth, plus other great fantasy worlds like A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. If that sounds good, there's a subscribe button around here somewhere. You often hear people talking about whether something is or isn't in line with the canon of Tolkien's work on Middle-earth, which is understandable. It's the professor's life's work, and we want to respect that. But what is a canon, really? Probably the most famous early literary canon, leaving religious canon aside here, is the Sherlock Holmes canon. Fans of the great detective very early on established what was to be considered canonical, the 56 short stories and 4 novels originally written by Arthur Conan Doyle. Only what we read in those short stories and novels is completely reliable as to the great detective's character and adventures. Everything else, adaptations, fan fictions, and even Conan Doyle's own other writings about Sherlock Holmes, were non-canonical. They may well be high quality, enjoyable, or even highly indicative of what Conan Doyle was intending, but they weren't canon. So that's what we're looking at here. What can we count as Tolkien's authoritative Middle-earth canon? Well, spoiler warning for this video, I suppose, but it's not as straightforward as you might think. The problem we have immediately is that Tolkien only published 4 Middle-earth books during his lifetime. There's The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, of course, including The Lord of the Rings' extensive appendices, plus The Adventures of Tom Bombadil, a collection of Hobbit poetry, not all about Tom Bombadil, and The Road Goes Ever On, another poetry book, but this time with attached sheet music by Donald Swan, authorised by Tolkien himself. I suppose we could draw a line around these 4 publications and say that they alone are canon, and some people do. After all, it's all that we know with 100% certainty is as Tolkien wanted. Except you have to then ask which version of The Hobbit, because he made some pretty big changes to that during his lifetime. I did a video on that if you're interested. And what about the unpublished epilogue to The Lord of the Rings? Tolkien clearly felt that the contents of that were things he wanted people to know about. I did a video on that as well. And what about the 2 later editions of The Road Goes Ever On, which include other poems by Tolkien? Are they canon or not, as they were published after his death? You get the point. But perhaps more significantly, even though the appendices to The Lord of the Rings contain a lot of lore, there's a lot of ground they don't cover that most people would consider essential to Tolkien's world. A deeper understanding of the creation of Middle-earth, the Valar, Ungoliant, the legends of the First Age, and so on. These we find in the Silmarillion, which was edited and published by Christopher Tolkien years after his father's death. I think most people would consider the Silmarillion authoritative. No one knew J.R.R. Tolkien's writings better than Christopher Tolkien, and the Silmarillion was evidently something Tolkien himself wanted published. But even then, we have to accept that what we read there is Christopher Tolkien's best attempt at pulling together his father's various writings, not anything that J.R.R. himself actually signed off on. And some parts of the wider narrative set out in the Silmarillion, like the ending of The Fall of Gondolin, for example, was simply left unfinished by J.R.R. Tolkien, so Christopher and his collaborator Guy Gavriel Kay wrote them themselves. And then you have Unfinished Tales and the epic 12-part History of Middle-earth series, being a mixture of Tolkien's original writings and Christopher's editorial comments. Some of these, for example the first 5 books of the History of Middle-earth and parts of some of the rest, are early drafts or other imaginative ventures that preceded The Lord of the Rings. An example here being the Notion Club papers, an abandoned novel which included the destruction of the great island civilization of Numenor. That idea was obviously refined and became a central part of Middle-earth history. Other parts of these collections include explanatory essays on things like Lembas, the Elven Waybread, the Palantiri, and Gandalf's explanation of background to the events of The Hobbit. And there are also wider, unfinished and previously unpublished works, which clearly show us much of Tolkien's mind about his creation. The Tale of the Mariner's Wife, which is probably our greatest source of information about life on Numenor. The unpublished epilogue to The Lord of the Rings that I mentioned earlier, and so on. Should all these be counted as canon because they are original Tolkien writings about Middle-earth, or not canon because he never signed off on them to be published during his lifetime? At which point, We should probably also briefly mention the various adaptations there have been of Tolkien's works. Some may have artistic merit, some may stick closely to the text, others may not, but none are canon, so to speak, though they may and often do introduce millions to Tolkien's world. So let's address this word canon, because it's noticeable that it's not a word Tolkien himself used. Instead, he viewed his work as an endless project, changing and tweaking things as he went along. There are recordings of interviews he did in which he changes his mind on how to conjugate certain verbs in Quenya, Elvish, mid-interview. He famously changed his mind on the origin and nature of orcs several times, as well as the nature and number of Balrogs in Middle-earth, and more other things than I could possibly list here. Christopher Tolkien famously started his chapter on the history of Galadriel and Celeborn in Unfinished Tales like this. There is no part of the history of Middle-earth more full of problems than the story of Galadriel and Celeborn, and it must be admitted that there are severe inconsistencies embedded in the traditions, or, to look at the matter from another point of view, that the role and importance of Galadriel only emerged slowly, and that her story underwent continual refashionings. He goes on to note how, over the course of decades, his father continually shifted his ideas on Galadriel's history. The version of events in his early writings is different to how it emerged when she spoke to Frodo in The Lord of the Rings, which again seems at odds to what is revealed in the appendices, and again even later in an essay he wrote near the end of his life. So how does this fit with the idea of canon? Not easily. Should we ignore Tolkien's later writings and have a very small canon, or widen our understanding of what is the true history of Middle-earth, and if so, where do we draw the line? Well, let me welcome you into the world of people who have been considering these issues for literally decades, because Tolkien academics have learned to embrace this ambiguity. Some err towards the view that more weight should be put on Tolkien's thoughts near the end of his life, published or unpublished. Others hold that The Lord of the Rings was the high point, and everything else should fit around that. But all would accept that all of Tolkien's writings on the subject are worthy of study and consideration, and that Tolkien's own approach involved a slow evolution of his world and its background. And that's okay. And crucially, a broad agreement has emerged that a better term than canon for Tolkien's work is legendarium, a word he used himself to describe his Middle-earth writings at least five times in his letters. This fits the intentionally mythopoeic nature of Tolkien's writings. For Tolkien, the point of creating his legendarium wasn't just to create a finished product and draw a line around it, but the act of ongoing creation itself, or sub-creation, as he preferred to call it. That was a lifelong passion and calling for him. As far as we can tell, there was no point at which he ever considered his work on Middle-earth completed. And understandably so, there's so much out there in the Silmarillion, Unfinished Tales and elsewhere that wasn't published during his lifetime, and he never finished a final draft of, but adds so much to our understanding of his world. I'm glad his son Christopher took this inclusive approach too, showing us all the different versions of this world, thereby allowing us to see the beauty in the act of creation itself, rather than just dismissing some things Tolkien wrote as outdated drafts or contrary to established facts. So, what is Tolkien's canon? Well, let's instead go with what the professor himself seemed to want, and what Christopher Tolkien honoured, which is not to use the concept of canon at all, but to talk instead about his legendarium. Of course, the professor's writings that were published during his lifetime should be especially honoured, but drawing a line around four publications and ignoring both his wider created world and ongoing commitment to changing and re-evaluating it through his whole life would seem to do him an even greater disservice. If you'd like to see more videos diving deep into the wonders of Tolkien's legendarium, please check out the playlist on the left of your screen. Or to support this channel, you can do that by clicking on the link on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.